Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to AusBiz Live from our Barangaroo studios. We kick off the afternoon with the call. 10 stocks picked by you. I put them to our expert panel. We do it all in 1 hour. It is the 3rd of August panel today. It's a cracker. Rudy Philippic Van Dyke from FN Arena and Carl Gabalinga from Thick Markets. Gentlemen, welcome. Good to see you. Rudy, welcome.
It's mutual.
Oh, that makes my heart sing. Carl, you're back online. Good flight back to the West.
I am. Yes, thanks, Koshy. Good to be back home. But not as beautiful weather as you had over there in Sydney. And thanks for the warm welcome at AusBiz. Much appreciated.
Yeah, no, it was good to see you, IRL. Am I sounding like a hipster?
Yeah, you do.
My grandkids are telling me in real life.
IRL. In real life, everybody who doesn't know what that means.
Let's get straight into it because there's a lot to get through, and you two are always really informative. First half hour, we'll take a look at Woolies, Imdex, United Malt. Hasn't that come down to earth the last couple of days? Coronado Global Resources and Nitro Software. Stock of the day, New Hope. Out with a market update ahead of full-year results. Miner is buying a 15% stake in Malabar Resources for around $94 million. New South Wales government is granting the Bengalla mining project an exploration license, which will ramp up local coal supply in the next 2 years. In the short term, New Hope expects thermal coal prices to remain at record levels. Carl, what did you think of the New Hope announcement and also the stock at the moment?
Yeah, well, it just shows they're just trying to, you know, feed the frenzy, aren't they, with coal prices. So this Malabar is an unlisted public company. So they actually raised some money and then took themselves off the boards in 2017. So I did try and do some research into the company and then, you know, reached a bunch of dead ends. So they've got a mine that's just about to go into production. They're fully funded now as part of the equity raising, which New Hope took part in. So that's kind of how they ended up with this stake. But it is, again, this goal, this desire to continue to get as much production under their belt as possible to take advantage of these high coal prices, which are amazing at the moment. So, you know, I like my bottom left, top right charts, and they don't get as bottom left, top right as the price of coal. I sent through, that's a New Hope chart, which is bottom left, top right. No surprise there given the coal chart. New Hope looks great. I mean, it took a little bit of a pause there on the Queensland royalties increase, which they do have some minor exposure to, but, you know, this is largely a New South Wales play. So it still looks good compared to, say, like a Stanmore, which got belted, and Terracom, which pulled back a bit as well. There's the coal chart there. So that's I wanted to zoom out, give you a sort of a really long-term view of it, just to put into perspective how unprecedented, isn't that word being thrown around so much lately, how unprecedented this move is. If you zoom in a little bit, go to the daily chart, it still looks good. It doesn't feel to me like one of those flash in the pans, at least not just yet. So I think there's some legs in this coal price rally. At least it's staying at these high prices, and if the coal price stays there, then just New Hope, Whitehaven, as I said, Terracom, I think still are highly undervalued. Those stocks, those thermal coal producers, are just going to make money hand over fist. But you have to be a little bit selective in the sector because, again, some of them got knocked about by this Queensland royalty thing. Those charts don't look as good. And then you've got your met coals out there as well. Met coal producers, we'll talk about one a little bit later on in the show, which don't look anywhere near as good as well. So if you have to pick one, Terracom, Whitehaven, New Hope would be my top three.
Okay. So even at these lofty levels, New Hope still a buy?
Oh, that's tough, isn't it? Look, it's something, you can see the chart. So it's been, it's been religiously every day on my Twitter shortlist, right? It's so good. A New Hope, it's there. Yeah, look, I have to back it. The chart still looks good. I'm going to say even now it's still worth a buy, but you have to understand, you know, I'm not as confident as I was, you know, six months ago in the upside, but the coal prices still look strong.
Rudy?
Yeah, the coal price does look strong, and so has the trend been. But my suspicion is that this is also now a very crowded trade. Human nature, when we go through 6 months and very, very few sectors really persistently work, then the few stocks that do work, they attract logically money, because that's the easy way to make money. So I'm suspecting a lot of people are in there. And I always get suspicious with when people predict these things far out into the future. It's a commodity. I know it's the circumstances are quite not normal.
No.
But I'm always suspicious when prices and for how long they can stay this high, et cetera, et cetera.
Let me pull
small changes can make a big difference.
Prices will come down. I totally agree.
Well,
like eventually,
all right.
No doubt it has to come down. But I think we've got this period, this window of opportunity where they're just going to make money hand over fist for the next, you know, 18 months, maybe, Rudy. You know, maybe 18 months.
But
I agree with Rudy. The thing will put coal prices, it'll halve, it'll quarter at some stage.
Gaurav Sodhi from Intelligent Investor says
it's a broken commodity.
This commodity is broken because there will be no supply. No bank will ever finance a coal mine again. No government will ever approve it. This stake in this supposedly new business, that's been years ago approved. It's not a new approval, so they're trying to sop up.
And I've been saying for years that as we phase out fossil fuel, the last remaining producers will have a jolly good time in the very last thralls of the... And that's a fact. But it takes... Again, small changes can have a very big impact on share price, in particular if they run that hard. It takes someone with a different type of risk appetite. That's not me.
Okay. So
I'm not. And definitely not when it's no longer on its knees and it's actually riding high.
Yeah.
Right.
Look, I agree. It's not a core. Like, it's not one of those core positions. It's more of a risk money play at these levels. Right. I think. But I have to back the trend.
Yeah. They got to pay a good dividend, though.
It's going to be massive.
They've got to pay huge amounts of dividend.
It's going to be massive.
Anyhow, they're cash making machines. Rudy, Linda wants a view. Let's go something a little less speculative as we take a look at the stocks you want us to analyse. Rudy, Linda wants a view on Woolworths.
We're going to complete different end of the spectrum.
Yes, exactly right. Which is what I love about the call. You never know what's coming up. It's full of surprises.
Full disclosure, I am a shareholder in Woolworths, and I have been for a very long time. My philosophy is very simple. If you are truly a long-term investor and you have a portfolio which is destined for the longer term, then Woolworths is one of those companies you just have to have in there. You know what I mean?
And Coles, or do you choose?
You can have both. I have both at the moment.
Right. Okay.
But the preference would be for Woolworths. The mistake that people make is they go for the cheaper one, and the cheaper one has been for a very long time Coles.
Yeah.
But the best performing one is Woolies.
Yeah.
People don't understand that if you are the best operator in a sector, You get rewarded for that with a premium valuation. That's essentially what's happening in the local grocery industry. However, if you don't own the stock, I don't think you should start chasing it here. It's bid up. See that one? Because the market has gone a little bit more defensive. We're preparing for rougher times ahead, potentially for a recession. Now, this company should, all else being equal, come out of the recession much stronger than it goes in it. The problem, however, is that, and you see a little bit on that chart, early in the year they disappointed on costs, as did Coles previously them.
Yeah.
And that is one of the big question marks we have now in the reporting season. So while they are beneficiaries of inflation, they are potentially, the uncertainty here is how have they managed costs over the past 6 months or so. So there's potential for disappointment, and the share price is not what I would call exceptionally cheap. I would be a little bit more cautious in the short term, but if you own it, by all means, buy more on weakness, keep it in the portfolio, because this is a very, very good long-term proposition.
Okay, so hold. Interesting, a couple of weeks ago, Coles came up. Henry Jennings was on and Ben Clark from TMS. They both had a hold on Coles as well, but both preferred Woolies.
Woolies is the better operator,
space. But Carl, Trader, if you look at that five-year chart, over the last 3 years, not a big range it goes in, is it?
So
it just plods along.
No, I have to correct both of you. They've spun off Endeavour.
That's a point. That's a very good point.
And Endeavour has performed really, really well on its own.
Yes. Good.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. Yeah, it's all back. It's for viewers that might not get it. It's not like you add the Endeavour share price onto Woolworths.
No.
So that's all back adjusted. But you were a shareholder. You know, if you had it long enough, you're a shareholder of both. And Endeavour has obviously gone up since it floated. So net as a shareholder of both, you've done well. And Rudy's correct there. I didn't think I'd agree very much with Rudy today when I found out I was coming on with him. But I agree with everything he said on Woolworths. I think it's definitely high up on the list of your quality defensive plays out there. I agree it's not the cheapest stock out there at the moment. I agree Coles looks a bit cheaper, but the growth on Coles may be a little bit less. I mean, it's half a dozen of one, six the other, isn't it, between the two. If I had to pick one of the two, so, you know, I know viewers are often about to allocate capital and they're looking to fill that spot, aren't they, in their supermarket space. I'm going to disagree. I'm going to go with Coles. I just think it's a little bit cheaper, the chart looks a little bit better, and the growth is about the same. So, but by all means, you know, if you have to pick Woolies for whatever reason, go for it too.
Okay, and
I'm not a buy, I'm a hold, yeah. Right. Look, I think it is also top of the range as well. The chart looks fine, but it is at the top of a pretty well-defined range.
Okay. All right. Alex, Carl was wanting a view on IMDEX, basically the mining services company.
Yes, so it does not just sort of the drilling of your holes in the ground, but obviously the processing of the assay results, and then they've got some pretty neat technology to help you sort of visualise the ore body in situ, sort of three-dimensional cloud-based stuff can be shared around everywhere, and helps you sort of analyse what you've got in the ground. Okay, so it's quite diversified in that regard, but having said that, it's still, you know, almost totally exposed to the mining sector. So, you know, its fortunes are going to ebb and flow at the moment, doing quite well because there's commodity prices up until very, very recently, as in the last month or so, have been going gangbusters. And that helps mining companies get financing to go out there and do exploration, okay? And we're back to sort of pre-COVID levels now on sort of financings in terms of, you know, going out there to find new stuff. So that's all pretty good. It's a company that operationally has executed very, very well. So that speaks to management's ability to navigate a difficult environment, you know, more recently in terms of sort of costs and supply chains. But they're fairly capital light, you know, it's more, you know, high returns on equity. It's more about the expertise and the software that they have. The only problem I have with IMDEX, it's not the execution, it's not the outlook. I think it's all pretty good. And we're going to talk about companies today where management hasn't been very good. Execution's been terrible and risks are high. I just don't think it's particularly cheap here. I think it sort of enjoyed those software technology style valuations up until sort of November last year, where everything, you know, obviously for tech started to unravel. I think we're at sort of a fair valuation for it now. So it was, I was going to say it was sort of high 20s and 30s on its PE. Now it's more like sort of 12s and 13s going forward. But, you know, for sort of high single digit, low double digit growth, I think that's fair. So fairly valued, and then we get to the chart. The chart looks horrific. So without the attractive valuation, with the chart looking horrible, I have to say, regrettably, sell, even though there is a quality business there.
Okay. Rudy?
Yeah, I wouldn't go there. There are two sectors on the stock exchange in general which generate over time most of the bankruptcies and the failures. One is retail, and we know why that is. Retail is a very competitive industry. Yeah. The other one are mining services providers. Some of the more inglorious failures we've had on the share market over the past two decades, they're all from the mining services sector. I suspect that the share price, on paper, this looks a great buy. I mean, the growth prospects are there. I agree with Carl, up to a certain extent, that in recent times, the management seem to have done all the right things. But if you go further back in history, they almost went bankrupt, these guys, at one stage. Again, that's the sector. So for my risk profile, I wouldn't go there. And I suspect that the share price is where it is, because the market is taking a much more cautious view on economic growth going forward and the impact on commodities.
Okay.
And again, given they are quite a small player, if one or two customers all of a sudden tighten the budgets, that means no growth for the following year or so.
Right,
so
the ripple effect is...
That's the risk that you're playing with.
Okay. All right. The market has certainly taken a view on United Malt over the last week or so, Rudy. Con wants a view on United Malt Group after their latest results. Of course, part of GrainCorp, spun out of GrainCorp, provides malt to brewers and craft brewers around the world.
You've heard me saying this before. I tend to wait 3 or 4 years before after a company lists, because to get its true metal, its true color. When this company listed, I remember a large,
huge,
and a lot of people were very excited about it.
Yep.
We don't have something like this. It's connected to the beer industry, to the boutique beers, which are going very well. It's almost a little bit like a Costa Group story. I mean, it's all very exciting.
Yeah.
And then you find out along the way that there are elements which management simply doesn't have under their control.
Right.
And United Malt has, I've lost count, but this must be 3 or 4 times a profit warning.
Yeah.
So management can do anything they want, but there's the weather, there's the rain, there's the sun, there's competition, there's so much that they don't control. And before you know it, there's another profit warning rolling out of there.
Right.
So for that, it's simply not my risk appetite. I would like, we had Woolworths earlier.
Yeah.
Last time at Woolworths issued a profit warning is a long time ago.
Yeah. Right?
And that was a lot of hubris at the top. If they stay away from that, they tend to do okay,
yeah.
And they don't fall 17% after they've already fallen repeatedly. If you go back to the IPO date, I mean, everyone's underwater now, and it's. I know some people like that stuff because it ultimately gets too cheap to ignore, but I like stocks that don't fall by that much,
right.
So I don't have to worry either.
Yeah, Carl.
Yeah, pretty similar to Rudy on that one. It's just been disappointment after disappointment for United Malt Group. And, it's an ag stock, right? So you have to go into these eyes wide open. Canadian barley crop, drought there, that's been a major impact, sent barley prices up, obviously one of the major inputs. But then also you've got energy costs, major input, and, freight and shipping, and just things getting delayed and not arriving on time. So they've had a tough time. They're saying that the expectations are that Canadian barley crop's going to improve, and that could help them out a little bit. Look, maybe some of those headwinds are going to back out, but I think what's happening with the chart, and there it is right there, I think the market's just lost patience with management. I think they've just lost patience and faith in terms of their ability to execute this environment, and therefore it's been put in the too hard basket. Let's take our licking on this one and go and find something else better to do with the market. The problem now is because this is at all-time lows, this is fairly new listing, that sounds bad in itself, right? All-time lows, but there's nothing beneath there to say, well, that's where it bounced from a few years ago, that's good value, that psychological low that you might hit. So for me, I think if you're going into it now, it really is that old adage of catching the falling knife. It does look a little bit cheap here, I must admit, but looking at that chart, it is the exact opposite of what you want to see. So literally, yep, take that chart, flip it upside down, and that's when you want to get into an agricultural stock when it looks like that.
And also, once a market loses confidence in management, it takes a long time to come back. People get scarred by it, don't they, psychologically, sort of investor remorse, and they go, I don't care what you're going to do for 3 years.
But management tends to leave then. You tend to find management goes, and then you've got the uncertainty of the next person coming in. Look, sometimes it hits, but most of the time it misses, right? It's not a nice cycle.
Okay.
Having said so, things can turn around very quickly with agricultural stocks, But then again, it takes someone with a different risk profile to go into agricultural stocks.
And Carl was backing up what you said. When the Californian barley price comes into your share price, you go, geez, how many elements can affect the share price are out of your control? Carl, Frankie wants a view on another coal producer, but this metallurgical coal, Coronado Global Resources, coal miner here at Australia in Queensland, and also they've got a mine in Virginia in the United States.
Yeah, look, I gave you the thermal coal price before. I should have given you a met coal price. It has looked, it's gone up dramatically, but it's actually pulled back instead of, you know, obviously thermal's hanging up there because guess what? People need to stay warm. Goshie, all right? We need
so
to
thermal coal goes into power stations, metallurgical coal goes into steel mills and things like that, does it?
Exactly. And I'm so glad, actually, we've got these two different coal stocks on today because so many of my clients call in and they say, hey, Carl, what coal stock should I buy?
Yeah.
You know, and then, well, hey, wait a minute. You know, not all coal stocks are created equally, all right? So now this is the problem for Coronado is it is almost exclusively the met coal, and the met coal is dependent, as you say, on steel production. And then you're tracing the dots back to China, right? Now, the IMF came out just last week, I think it was, and downgraded their growth expectations for China to 3.3% per annum, which is the lowest since 1976. And many people would argue, the bulls would argue, hey, Carl, look, it's because of all the lockdowns, it's going to bounce back dramatically. Yeah. Well, I get that picture, but that Chinese economic growth number has consistently disappointed to the downside for the better part of a decade now. And I'm a trend follower, and I can't see that trend changing anytime soon. The government has continuously tried to stimulate with not a lot of effect because debt levels are so high. You've just got a bunch of zombie property companies out there that they continue to prop up. And we're drawing the dots back to steel consumption is the major consumption is there from that Chinese property market. So I'm far less bullish on something like Coronado than I am on New Hope or any of those other thermal coal stocks we talked about. So I'm going to say no on that basis. And then the chart, if you have a look at that, that's more actually, here we go. This is I'll promise I'll be quicker on all the other ones if I can take a little bit more time on this one, Goshie. What we've got up here is this idea of a value trap. So what I do before I come on the call is I run every stock through my fundamental analysis filter. So there's 2, 4, 6, 8, I don't know, about 15 different financial metrics that I put every stock through, and I compare them using a normal distribution curve to every other stock in the All Ordinaries. So you can see how Coronado rates compared to all of the other stocks in the All Ords. It's almost 100% on everything. Yeah. And the reason for that is we are cycling this massive, massive, huge bump in earnings where it's trading on a PE of about 1.5, okay? Wow. A dividend yield in the double digits. But the thing is, investors, viewers often will come and look at that and they go, oh, wow, I want to find something with a low PE and a high dividend yield, okay? And they get onto their platform with their, you know, whatever it is, NabTrade or ComSec or whatever it is, and they have that data and they go, wow, look at this, I have to buy this. The problem is, if you fast forward, that one PE in 3 years' time is 23. Okay, so earnings are expected to be a fraction in a few years' time of what they are now because of this coal price cycle and the worries about global growth. That dividend yield is going to go from, you know, about 12 or 13%, which sounds great now, to about 5%. So this is what we call the value trap. When you hear fundamental analysts or market analysts talk about this value trap, it is this idea that you get pegged on what is happening now and you don't look down the track. So great numbers now aren't necessarily great numbers down the track. What I was about to say was the chart on Coronado looks like it's about to break down. I would go on that basis sell. You can see there it's just that bouncing ball pattern about to fall off the end of the table, and therefore I think it's a sell.
Rudy?
I think, fucking hell, it's just it's like a love fest today. And sorry for swearing. I agree with
I was actually a bit sorry you mumbled it, but I thought did Rudy just use the F word?
Have we got the beep button there?
I agree with Carl. And this is a point I've been making recently as well. The mistake that investors make, they think that a low PE equals excellent opportunity.
Yeah.
Now commodity stocks are trading on low PEs because the market's preparing for recession.
Yeah.
And at the same time, a lot of commodity stocks have had exceptional pricing, which means you have to put them on a low PE. That's a normal market response because it's not going to last.
Yeah. Yeah?
So PEs of 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, whatever they're trading on, is not by definition a better proposition than a Woolies or a CSL, which are trading on multiples of those PEs.
Yeah? Yeah,
you have to take a view on what's in the future. Having said so, I think the market has become very skeptical towards steel. And that's the reason why BlueScope, trading on 3 PE 6 months ago, is down 18% today. The market is very skeptical about steel in Asia, and that's obviously related to China. I mean, again, I agree with Carl. The housing sector in China looks really like a house of cards that's being held up now by with everything they can in Beijing. It doesn't look like that's a very strong engine for growth going forward, apart from the occasional bump upwards. And I think that's the only reason why you would own a stock like Coronado. Okay. You're suspecting that China does something and it temporarily props up the sector again, and the share market might take it as a positive for the time being.
Yeah.
But again, in general terms, I'm very skeptical about buying commodity stocks when a recession might be along the horizon.
So that's a sell from you as well. Will we call that an effing sell?
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
That's
all
the
right.
one. Double.
Rudy, Samira wants a view on Nitro's software. Nitro produces a whole bunch of productivity tools. Basically, it's an alternative to Adobe. Recent update the last couple of days.
That company they bought is from Belgium, by the way.
Oh.
Which is
so do you have a soft spot?
Well, if they drink beer, maybe. I think this is another classic example of, and I do understand why these questions come in, because these share prices fall so deeply.
Yeah.
Obviously, the normal response from people is, oh, it has fallen so much.
In the tech boom,
has to be
loved it.
Exactly, has to be great value.
Well, like Appen.
Like Appen, yeah, exactly. Just as a short intermezzo, my standard joke is always, what's the stock that has fallen by 90%? Well, that's a stock that falls by 80% first and then halves in price. Yeah.
Right.
Now, that's a typical Appen. I now have to reverse, and I have to do a second joke on the basis of the zips of the world.
Right.
What's the stock that's fallen by 80%? That's one that drops by 90% first and then doubles. Yeah.
Right.
You're still down 80%.
Right.
Anyway, mathematics for the viewers out there. The problem with a company like Nitro is there's a lot of problems. One of them is they're not profitable.
Yeah.
And since the environment has changed this year, investors want profits. Now, they can't give it for the short term. I mean, they have predictions, but they're not there yet. So the other problem they have is they have now consistently been underperforming on expectations. And one of the numbers that the market is paying really close attention to is what it's so-called ARR, the annual returning revenues, which is basically the money they're making now that is almost bound to return in the coming years, and that gives you some certainty as an investor. Now, if you constantly disappoint, then constantly expectations will be pared back and the share price follows suit. Personally, after such a big fall, I think there are, given the whole sector has been sold down, much better propositions out there with much better risk profile.
Yep, and pretty competitive market, that productivity tools with some big global
behemoths. That's true, but you're up against Adobe, starters.
Carl?
Yeah, I think Rudy's F-bomb before was more about the fact that we're agreeing on stuff today than anything else. And look, we both tackle the markets from very different perspectives.
Yeah.
But we I think both of our BS filters, I won't drop any other swear words today for you, Koshy, but our BS filters are pretty high and are pretty accurate. And I think we're kind of agreeing on some of these things on that basis. And I think this is one where the BS filters, sounding the alarm bells. And look, it wasn't even that good in the tech boom on the way up, this one, because it was just so ridiculously overvalued, even by those standards, and it just continued to miss expectations. So my spreadsheet, I've got broker consensus estimates going forward for the next three FYs, and I do remember covering this one for you on the call well over a year ago, and it was supposed to go OCF positive in 2023, I think it was, or 2022, and maybe have its maiden profit in 2023. And what you find with a lot of these tech companies, because they continue to disappoint, their costs are so high, they can't control those costs to fund that growth. They don't get operationally cash flow positive. That gets getting kicked down the road, and so does the profit. So this one now, looking on my forward forecast, isn't going to make money out to FY 2025. It's got a negative EPS of about 9 cents there, and the trend isn't looking good up to that point. So I have no idea when these guys are going to make money, if they ever do. And on that basis, I do feel it's uninvestable. I think the chart reflects that, and you should follow what the market is thinking about this, and I would therefore go with a sell.
Okay. All right, let's recap the first five stocks. Stock of the day, a buy from Carl, a no from Rudy. Woolworths, a hold from both. Carl prefers Coles in the supermarket space. Rudy prefers Woolies. Imdex, a sell from Rudy, a no from Carl. United Malt, no from both. Coronado, a sell from Carl, an effing sell from Rudy. And Nitro, a sell from Carl, and a no from Rudy as well. Here on the call, we've been tracking our own high conviction fantasy portfolio as picked by the investment committee. Latest episode of the investment committee went live last night, so go to ausbiz.com and watch it on the platform. So heading into August, Ordinate was removed. Yes, that's controversial. And Oz Minerals was added. The committee reckons Ordinate has peaked. They also upped the holding size of the holding in Woodside. We'll update you on how the updated portfolio is travelling later in the week. And don't forget to keep sending in all the requests for the call, because that's a first filter to the investment committee.
At CMC, we've been in the game for a while, and although a lot of things have changed, our mentality hasn't. We aim to give experienced traders the best trading experience, like our expert platform with its second-to-none trading tools, plus our pricing is completely transparent. That's why people who've been trading for a long time stay with us for a long time. So if you're serious about trading, switch to the market leader trusted for over 30 years. Trade CFDs your way at cmcmarkets.com. You don't own underlying assets. Consider relevant PDS and TMD or information memorandum for CMC Pro accounts at our website.
This half hour, we're going to take a look at Ansell, Ventia Services, 92 Energy, National Tyre and Wheel, and Westpac. You couldn't get a more diverse five stocks if you tried, which is what we love about the call. Rudy, Josh wants a view on Ansell, the basically the healthcare production and mainly surgical gloves, isn't it?
Well, it's protective gear in general. You won't believe it, but these guys do oil platforms and the likes.
Right.
Anything that, firemen, right? Anything right. That needs protection.
Big hazard suits and all that sort of stuff. They got out of condoms years ago, didn't they?
Yes. They sold that. They thought they didn't have a competitive position in that.
Right.
Having to deal with supermarkets and trying to sell them gloves and condoms.
Yeah, they just went
for the gloves. No. And the reason is as follows. Now, I actually know Ansell quite well. It's a very good performer over a long period of time. I regard it a little bit as a little Amcor. But the reason why I like Amcor a lot more, it's because it's a larger business and it tends to be better at managing its costs.
Right.
And that is my question mark for Ansell at this point in time. Ansell is very dependent on, amongst other things, oil, because that's where latex comes from.
Yeah.
And plus, I mean, every once in a while they have some competitive pressures from cheap products from Malaysia. But my problem here is the oil price and the managing of costs by Ansell, where I'm less confident.
Right.
Now, I can understand that people jumped on Ansell when it was $22.
Yeah.
I can see the value there. At $26, where I think it is now, it can be back at $22 in a heartbeat if they come out with their result. Having said so, if they manage this period or somehow they come out of this period with the high oil price and the recession coming and everything, they probably are again looking at a long-term well performance ahead, because the share price is really too cheap for their true potential.
Okay.
But short-term, I think the risks I don't like the risk profile at this point in time. So I'll prefer to wait until the result in August.
Right, but you prefer Amcor in that sector. Carl?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with him again. I can't believe it.
Even the chart says that. Rudy says charts are hocus pocus, but even the chart's agreeing with him. That might change his view.
I think this is a high quality stock. So if you are, you know, we talk about defensive plays and we talk about Woolworths and Coles, and this is, look, you can't put all your defensive plays in your supermarket basket, right? I mean, you need to, if you're a defensive investor, you need to find other sectors with defensive plays. And this is an excellent one. It has just grown its earnings so consistently, even prior to the pandemic bump, which it is now cycling. But Rudy's right. It costs, you know, I sent through a chart of oil. I was going to talk about that later on, but it's probably worth putting up now because, yeah, this is the big deal for them. It's a short-term, it's double-edged, though, because, look, I think, if anything, energy prices are probably going to come down for oil specifically. So that might help them out. But there's going to be this current earnings is where some of that disclosure is going to happen as to you know, it not being so good. I agree. Look, at 22, that's where we think it's cheap. I think around here, we think it's fully valued. The chart is good, not great. The chart is okay. I wouldn't even say good. It's a little bit of a rally there, but not exciting. I think if you've got it, there's just enough, if I really squint in there, to hold it if you are a defensive investor looking for quality. But if you're a growth investor like me looking for momentum, bottom left, top right, you wouldn't be buying this one.
Okay. All right. Verity wants a view, Carl, on Ventia Services. It's in the infrastructure maintenance business in Australia and New Zealand.
What a great segue, actually, because we're talking about this idea of defensive. Maybe this is the defensive call today. You know, we've gone Woolworths, we've gone Ansell potentially, and now we're talking about Ventia, which provides all the sort of the asset maintenance services for your big infrastructure. So, you know, Sydney Harbour Tunnel, a bunch of hospitals, a New Zealand power grid, for example, amongst many, many other things. So they keep the essential stuff running. So you would say they're pretty essential as well in the whole scheme of things. And we've talked about costs as well, rising costs for a lot of companies. Well, most of the vast majority, 94%, according to the company, percent of their contracts are based upon clauses where they can claw back higher costs. Okay, so they're pretty well protected in that regard. Earnings growth out looks pretty good. You know, we're talking high single digits. That's okay, not shooting the lights out, but, you know, a pretty reasonable valuation to go on it right now with sort of 14 this year, 13 to 12 for the next couple of years, and a pretty good, dividend yield there, 5.5% fully franked. So defensively, tick, 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 and then I get to the chart, and I like the chart. I think the chart looks good. It's, for the most part, bottom left, top right. Short-term trends are in place. Price action looks good. So for your defensive investor, this is absolutely a buy for me.
Okay. Rudy, hasn't been going that long for you.
No, that's one thing. The other thing is it is still a relatively small company in the bigger scheme of things.
Yeah.
And the third element to me as an investor is the share price has done quite well already. So I would prefer to wait, A, August results. Second one, probably better to buy them on weakness.
Right.
And on a very simplistic theory, September is still ahead of us. Yep. If you get a traditional September weakness, by all means, wait for September.
If you're in it, hold it. Hold?
Well, if I'm assuming that if you're in it, that you're very familiar with the company and you're very happy to cash the dividends, all of that. You can stay in there.
Okay. All right. Grace wants a view, Rudy, on 92 Energy, the uranium exploration company with holdings in Canada.
Yeah. It takes a really different risk profile. I mean, I know uranium is one of those hot sectors, but I find it always difficult to buy a company that has no revenue, only costs, and the only reason why you would buy it is because the price of the product goes up, but it's not producing any.
Yeah.
For me, as long as it's in the ground, for me, it has no value.
Yeah.
And I suspect also the market cap is quite low. The daily turnover in shares is quite low. So for me, if you want to buy uranium, why wouldn't you buy Paladin Resources, for example? Yeah. Yes, they're not producing at the moment, but they want to produce in 18 months' time.
Right,
I think is a much better proposition than a company that may never produce. And I remember the last uranium boom, we had more than 100 companies on the stock exchange.
Yeah.
10 years, 15 years later, none of those companies is producing.
Yeah. Good point. Carl?
I'm going to disagree with Rudy on this one. Not to say that I would buy 92 Energy, but I just think, you know, there's a time and a place in your portfolio for stocks like 92, which, let's face it, are burning cash. That's what they do. But a perspective to, you know, be a, you know, if they hit, if they find what they're looking for, you know, that could be fantastic. But at the same time, I want to buy them when there's some momentum. I also want to buy them when they've got some results coming out. And these guys certainly have some results coming about. So obviously, it's a northern hemisphere. If you don't know what they do, they're looking for uranium in Canada, in the Athabasca Basin, I think I've pronounced it right. And in and around there, you've got a bunch of producing and historical mines, some of the biggest uranium mines in the world. Some of them are on care and maintenance. Some of them are deliberately on low production because it's cheaper sometimes to produce at marginal profits instead of closing a mine down right. and maintaining it, then having to invest. So the uranium price is probably another picture we can talk about. But look, in terms of real estate, it's all about location, location, location. And these guys are in about the best place you can be outside of, say, Namibia. They are 10 kilometres away from some of the biggest mines in the world. So they're drilling. Results so far look good. Some really high-grade stuff. It's shallow. It's open in all directions. So if this is my favourite uranium exploration play, okay, and there are many, many, many of them out there. That's the uranium price. You can see how it has rallied recently. But is pulling back a little bit. And that pullback is what's causing a lot of those Paladins, Boss Energies, Lotus, Deep Yellow, Viamy's been taken over, Peninsulas, all to pull back a bit, okay? So if you want to go producers, Rudy's right, Paladins got a minor care and maintenance, Boss has got a minor care and maintenance, Lotus has a mine on care and maintenance. They could get started if the uranium price popped up within the next sort of 18 months, each of them. Funding is going to be an issue for each of them. Aura Energy and Deep Yellow would be the next two, which are closest to having a resource which could get to mine in the next couple of years. As I said, 92, long story short, is my favourite exploration play. And if that's you, if you're uranium bull, then that would be the one you would buy. But for me, the chart isn't quite there yet to call it a buy. If the chart picks up a little bit, gets some momentum, I'd happily call it a buy. So it's a hold for now.
Okay. All right. David wants a view, Carl, on National Tyre and Wheel, the big, as the name implies, the big car tyre and truck tyre distribution arm.
Yeah, what we talked about earlier on, Ansell's one, obviously latex, major input in latex is crude oil, and the major input into tyres is crude oil again. So that stat I gave you last time I covered this, Koshy, back in May, I think it was, I said 7 gallons of oil goes into every tyre. It's astonishing. So obviously the suppliers, NTD's suppliers have jacked up their prices. And if you're, if you're trying to buy anything, we're doing some renovations at the moment. We're buying all sorts of stone and tiles and all sorts of things. I know they're not tires, but because the freight costs have just gone astronomically through the roof, things that are double what they were just 12 months ago. So these guys are experiencing the same thing. Plus, things aren't arriving on time. Staff are sick with COVID. So they just had this horrible period, punctuated really by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Funnily enough, because that sent the oil price spiking. Looking forward, I don't think enough of these things are going to back out quickly enough to save these guys. And I think the trend is very much now established to the downside on the chart. So it's tough to make a business case. It's tough to make a technical case. So I'm going to stick with my original rating from last time with a sell. That's the crude oil price. I do think that's probably more likely to come down than to go up. Maybe that's going to help National Tyre a little bit, but I just don't think it's compelling enough to go for a buy just on that basis.
Okay, so if the oil price is falling out of bed, you'd get out of the Woodsides and Santos's and the like.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. We talked about your investment committee increasing Woodside.
Yep.
I think the oil price is going to go down. I actually think it's peaked, and we are going to see lower oil prices over the next 6 months.
I'm not in an investment committee, but I'm assuming they were doing that because of gas, not of oil.
Yes, yeah. With the gas price.
And there is now, usually, that's not the case, but at the moment we have a divergence. I mean, gas is the new coal,
and
oil is just doing what oil does best,
right.
Confusing everyone.
Yeah. 7 gallons of oil into a tyre.
Yes, I know. It's a lot, isn't it?
Weird, isn't it?
Yes, well, yes. Okay. It also means that it shows you how difficult it is to get the world off oil.
Yeah, right?
Don't mention diapers.
No. Oh. Well, how much oil goes into a diet?
I don't know how much it is, but it is an oil product.
Is that
oil? It was developed by Royal Dutch Shell in Amsterdam.
Okay.
National tire and wheels. You can take a view that everything that's been holding them back thus far, that will bring some relief at some point. And that's why maybe you can take a punt on this talk. But I hasten to say, If you invest for the longer term, more often than not, these vulnerable small cap companies, they do not perform in the long run. They do perform occasionally, so that's almost becomes like a trading stock or a punt every once in a while. You wouldn't want to put a share price like this next to ResMed or Aristocrat or whatever. I mean, it disappears into the nothingness. And that's basically where, as an investor, I sit. Why would you go for this very low volume, very low market cap? It obviously is vulnerable to a lot of elements out there, post-COVID. And you're now basically trying to respond to that they will get relief at some point, which is probably, arguably, is going to happen at some point. But I'm not in favor. I'm with Carla here as well. Given that we have had a weak share market for 5 or 6 months, there's plenty of stocks out there, very much more rewarding risk profile, in particular over the long run.
Right. Okay, 1.6 quarts of oil goes into each diaper.
There you go.
Oh, no, for their entire diapering period. A cup of oil goes into the plastic to make a nappy.
A nappy.
Be a grandfather with two 7-month-olds at the moment and a toddler. You add up how many you go through a day.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
7 gallons a day, probably.
Yeah. All right. That's interesting. All right. How much oil goes into different products. Rudy, our final stock is Westpac.
Okay.
What do you think? Zach wants a view on Westpac.
We haven't been the most optimistic bunch, both of us, today.
No.
And unfortunately, I'll ask the computer.
Right.
No, computer says no. So it's a no for me. Again, I think, listen, the big question mark here is we're seeing now pretty much an acceleration in weakness in the housing market locally.
Right.
The big question mark is, how is that going to impact on A, household spending, and on mortgages and all of that. So in such an environment, and I know people like Carl always go, you take the cheaper one in the sector. Well, the cheaper one at this point is probably ANZ and probably competing with Westpac, but they're both not well-run banks at this point in time. I mean,
don't when interest rates go up, supposedly their margins go up.
Yeah, but that's one element. The other element is that bad debts grow as well, and these guys are unfortunately battling rising costs as well.
Yeah.
So the whole debate in the market now is how much exactly will fall through to the bottom line, and nobody's really quite sure about it, but. As a long-term investor, you want to go with the market leader and with the best one companies in the sector. At this point in time, the market has definitely given the clues there. NAB and CBA are premium banks, and the other ones are not.
Right.
Yes, you get a higher dividend. Yes, you get a cheaper valuation. But these guys are not well-run businesses.
Okay.
So I'm not a big fan of it. Taking a positive view,
they're not going
to cut their dividends. They, at worst, probably will just keep them stable. But I also think they're not going to be, let me put it this way, low expectations for the 18 months ahead.
Right.
Probably best, and maybe then they can surprise on the upside.
All right. Carl, Credit Corp came out and its share price was down because it said people are paying off their credit cards more. So loan book availability isn't out there for them to buy. So you're in this sort of crossroads at the moment, aren't you?
Look, it's such a dynamic environment for these financial services companies at the moment. And whilst I think they will get a bounce, as you say, rates have gone up. So what they're doing is obviously not putting up their deposit rates, funnily enough, as much as they're charging on their mortgage rates. And they've got this little window where that where that'll work for them. And they're going to make, you know, I think we're going to have a pretty good reporting season. I think that's why we're seeing these rallies. So as Rudy mentioned, NAB and CBA, huge rallies, you know, 20-odd percent plus, which I think has bench-pressed this entire index. So CSL's rallied and your big four banks have rallied. Well, ANZ's still flat for some reason, but three out of the four. So that actually concerns me about the broader index as well. I think a lot of this recent rally has been juiced by the financial services companies. There are huge weightings there. And the rest of the market is vulnerable to this slowing growth story. Rudy touched upon it with what's going on with the housing market. So I think longer term, medium term outside of this next reporting season, because the yield curve is largely inverted now, right? So what that means is that the banks have to, that they what they do is they obviously try and borrow from us and pay us very short-term rates and then lend to us at very long-term rates. They're going to have to pay more to get the funding from us and then get relatively less from their mortgage rates as time goes on. And that inversion is going to, well, it's there because we're expecting a recession to appear sometime very soon. It's already happening in the US potentially and here in the not-too-distant future. So this logic of buying banks heading into a potential recession doesn't sit well to me. I think they've had huge bounces, and I think that makes them expensive here. So if you're a bank holder, I'd almost be taking some profits on these shares rather than looking to get in right now. If you're going to ignore everything I've just said, because you know you'll never sell your banks, why would you? And you have to buy another one. Would you buy Westpac? Well, it is our preferred pick in the sector, but it's not exactly a buy per se. I mean, if you have to buy a bank, I think Westpac's the one you would get. It's got the best expected growth, the best dividend, well, it's relatively better dividend yield and a lower PE. So if that's the one, but I wouldn't buy it personally.
Okay, all right. Let's recap the final five stocks. Ansell, a no from Rudy. He prefers Amcor in this sector. A hold from Carl. Ventia, a long-term buy for defensive investors, a hold from Rudy. 92 Energy, a no from Rudy. Why wouldn't you look at a producer like Paladin if you want to get into uranium? A hold from Carl. National Tire, a sell from Carl, a no from Rudy. And Westpac, a no from Rudy. And Carl is saying take profits, basically, if you're in any of the big four banks at the moment. Carl Capalinga from Think Markets, always great to catch up. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. And Rudy Phillips.
Thanks, Koshy.
From FN Arena. Good to see you.
My pleasure.
All right. If you've got any stocks you want me to put to our expert panels, just put them in an email, thecall@ausbiz.com.au, or tweet us using the @AusbizTV handle. Reminder, to find all the stocks in the calls portfolio, head to ausbiz.co/portfolio. That's it from us. See you tomorrow at midday for another edition of The Call. Up next, the small caps.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.